Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get Shungite to the masses. You are entering the Shungite Zone. This is the Shungite Radio Show produced by Cosmic Reality Radio.
All right. So today's date is the 20th. Oh boy. Okay. Welcome to Shungite Reality. It is August 20th, 2026. And my name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Derek Condon and Mark Joseph. For those people that have been wondering what's happened, well, I spent essentially 4 months in medical hell. And I'm not going to talk about it on this show because this is a Shungite show and we've got a lot of things to talk about. But just, I thank all you people that put out all the good vibes. And it was an experience. I don't want to go through it again. But I know now what other people have gone through. So, Mark, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Great to have everybody back on. Yeah, and looking forward to hearing all the updates.
Yeah. So I'm going to just turn it over to Derek. And yes, we're going to be talking. I just want to say this. I was talking to Mark, and Mark was offering me some information on energy healing. And I said to him, you know, because in this 4 months, well, 3 months, because I came back home, but I was still in rehab and I didn't get on the internet. But in the hospital and in the rehab, there was no internet. I could not get on the internet. It was, both places were saturated with incredible electromagnetic poisoning, and I had no Shungite. I had taken off my jewelry because that gets stolen in hospitals, and I had Shungite rubber with me. Well, it didn't take long for that to disappear. Now, some nurse that thought she owned the hospital probably said, I don't know what this is, I'm going to throw it out. It's probably something like that. But I was basically in an electromagnetic hellhole for 3 months. So when I got out and I came back to this yard with a quarter of a ton of Shungite in the yard and all sorts of energy devices, did I start feeling better right away? Yes. But Mark's telling me about this energy device and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, Mark, I haven't even worked with any of mine. I came into this house and I just never turned on any of the magical energy healing devices that I have in the house. So that's what I did. I went to the turpentine spiral that I had Walt make. And since I've been on that, I've done a lot better. Let me put it to you that way. I absolutely can testify that this thing is making me better. So I just wanted to tell Mark that, and also to just say, yes, this is a Shungite show. But Derek, you can't be into Shungite and not be open to paranormal environment. Let me put it to you that way. And so Derek has written some books that are absolutely fascinating. And I just want to make sure I get this on the record, Derek, before we even begin. I'm trying to get to... Okay. Irma, who's one of our old time, she actually translated the Shungite Reality book, my book, into Russian. So she, I sent her to the website, cosmicshungite.com, but put in the search books and you'll find it. But she went there, she looked at the book, I guess, I don't know. But she says, hi, Nancy, got Derek's book. Oh, well, she got it. It is so different from his previous book on Shungite. Here he is a fascinating fiction slash adventure writer with a colorful language, entertaining stories. I enjoy reading it and cannot put it down. Thank you for introducing it to me. Okay, and then she came back a day later. My jaw drops when I read these beautiful metaphors. The story is full of them. His language is so poetic and rich. Great reading. Thank you. So that's somebody that I have a deep appreciation for. She's not going to BS. And if she says that about those books, then even though I haven't had a time to be able to read them, I'm going to say they sound great, Derek. So why don't you give us a background on that, unless you want to do some kind of introductory to where we are in the universe? I don't know.
Yeah, no problem. So what Nancy's talking about is, since we've been off air for the last few months and she's been recovering, I had a lot of time on my hands. So now the total number of books, and it's called the Triangle series. So think like Bermuda Triangle, a lot of unusual paranormal things, UFO stuff, Bigfoot, missing persons. So I've now, and I'll be publishing the last one today on Amazon as well, but I've written seven of them. And the first one was called Skagit Triangle, which is the county I live in Washington State. And I had such, tremendous feedback up here and selling out of the books that I go, well, heck, there's enough stories like this everywhere. So after that, again, the last couple few months, I've written the Seattle Triangle, the Spokane Triangle. So those first three are situated here in Washington State, but I've also written the Oregon Triangle and then Northern, Central, and Southern California Triangle books. So seven of them total so far. And again, the feedback's been really good. So I'm going to go ahead and continue into other states as well. So I'm not going to limit it just to the West Coast. But for the purposes of this podcast, yeah, all the West Coast versions are done. Many of them are available on, like Nancy mentioned, on cosmicshungite.com website. And for the ones that aren't there yet, they're all already published on Amazon. So if someone's interested and, let's say they live in California, they can just order them on Amazon if they're interested. So it's, yeah, I've taken the time and done a lot of research. And to be honest, these books kind of write themselves because the information, the stories, and the, witness statements are all already out there. So what I do is I go to a lot of it revolves around Project Blue Book, and which would be different, government released files on UFO or UAP, unidentified aerial phenomenon, would be what UAP is, or UFOs. And then also some of it from the Bigfoot Research Organization. So for probably decades now, people have been, submitting reports on their Bigfoot or Sasquatch sightings and encounters through that organization. And then there's different, what I'll just kind of summarize as ghost stories and whatnot that are known in, again, we're just focusing this time on the West Coast, but through Washington, Oregon, and California. So I did some deep research on that, pulled those up, and long story short, I put these various triangle books together. So I'm just calling it the Triangle series because initially it was just going to be one book. And then I got very, I don't know how many places now up here in Washington are carrying the book. And I've got some signing and speaking engagements. All caught me by surprise because I didn't know if one person would buy the book. So I went ahead and elaborated and extended it to a series. And like I mentioned, the last one in the West Coast series is Southern California Triangle that'll get published today on Amazon. I'm finishing editing right now. Actually, I'll be finishing it after this podcast, but the others are already up. So I bring up the stories and I do the research on the various topics, be it Bigfoot or UFOs or ghosts or unusual, unexplained paranormal phenomena. And then I turn it into a story form. So it's a little more readable and entertaining because a lot of the reports are, well, many of them are, let's go with the Bigfoot ones, just, are the average people. And I've submitted my own, just telling them kind of factual stories. Here's what I saw, or here's where it was. And, those aren't the easiest thing to read. So then I turned it into a story form, we'll just call it, so that it reads a little bit better. And a lot of these, And all of the topics I've just mentioned are in each of the books relative to their location. And many of them are, a few paragraphs long is all, because there's only so much information on it, let's say, and others are several pages. It just depends. If it was like a Project Blue Book file, well, sometimes there's a lot more information on those, so then I can elaborate in the story. And I appreciate what you read, Nancy, about what Irma said, because these books are totally different than my previous books, namely the Shungite Unveiled book, because that was more, about Shungite and more direct, how you work with energy, how you work with Shungite. So it's not stories, you can say, to where I'm going through where there's actual, different specific people involved or organizations or things like that. So it was kind of fun to write these books, and they kind of wrote themselves, which was really nice, a good part of it, because the information was there from the firsthand eyewitnesses, or again, the government reports or Bigfoot organization reports, or there's just a plethora of sources. And I do note in the back of any of all of the books, all the sources I found the information at. So if somebody wants to go, well, where did he find the info on this ghost or this, that, or the other? It's all in the back of the books. All seven of them have their own sources and endnotes, and including in the one that's called Seattle Triangle. I finally, because it was located, that triangle encompassed Monroe, Washington, which is where I was a correctional officer for 16 years. So that was a more of a personal one for me. Many of the story, as I'm calling them, stories in there are segments, because I've included a lot of my prison stories, from ghost ones to silent helicopters. And I brought some of those up, Mark and Nancy, that if we want, we can touch on some of the specific stories, and I can read segments of them if we want to get into that. But that was kind of fun to have those ones, because I've talked about a few of those things on podcasts before, but pretty vaguely, and definitely not in story form as I'm doing it now, to where it's a little more entertaining. But yeah, so that was kind of interesting from my perspective, getting into some more of the personal stuff. Again, and at least in that book, the Seattle Triangle version, or book of the series, that one encompasses Monroe, Washington. So I worked at Washington State Reformatory. I'm not sure if I mentioned that yet or not. So yeah, that's why they would read a little bit differently, well, a lot differently than my the Natural Beekeeper's Path book, or Everyday Magic book, which was another one I wrote. And all of these books I'm mentioning are all available on Amazon already if someone's interested. And I will be, like I kind of alluded to earlier, expanding the Triangle series into, well, probably every state, as far as I can tell. Alaska will be the next one. But as I do my research, or I get feedback, like someone came in the other day to Bigfoot's Gems, which is, for those that don't know, my polished rock and crystal, but really Shungite should go before that, Shungite store located in Mount Vernon, Washington. So they've come in, read the books, and they go, well, did you know I'm from the Appalachia Mountains, or another one's from Louisiana, where I also lived and have personal stories from my time living deep in the South. I mean, I've lived in seven states, including Hawaii, so I've got personal stories of the paranormal, avenues from all of those states I've lived in, and that's including Alaska. So yeah, I'm getting a lot of requests for the various states. So I'm going to, just as the weeks continue, expand into new books within the Triangle series. And the first, probably I'll relegate the West Coast versions to cosmicshungite.com website and sell them from there. Otherwise, I'm having to just, because the series is expanding so quickly, that it's just too many books for me to keep on hand. So you might want to just check out Amazon for some of them. And heck, they probably even have faster shipping than I do. But yeah, so that's what we're kind of talking about today. And I don't think either Mark or Nancy, because I just here recently sent them private PDF versions of, I think, just one book, to be honest, the first one, and none of the others yet, because they're busy as well. So No one's really read them yet. Well, other than again, those that have purchased them online. So I thought maybe if you guys were open to it, I can read a couple of that. And again, they're just a few paragraphs each usually. So I'm not talking about sitting here for an hour and just reading the whole book to you, but I did bring up some of the key ones that I had firsthand experience in. They were my sightings, be it UFOs or a ghost story from the prison I was at. And that prison is, I should have pulled that up before the show, but well over 100 years old. So it's the oldest prison in Washington State. It's 100 and some odd years old, and it looks it. And so it's got just a ton of stories in it that apply to that prison that I learned when I was there as an officer before I even got into all of this stuff. Because I started there back in, I think it was 2003, before I was even really looking into paranormal stuff, shungite, any of this stuff. And then I thought, well, heck, this is the time to go ahead and share some of those firsthand experiences. So again, just reiterate, those ones are in the Seattle Triangle one, but all of the books have just a lot of information, a lot of stories about what's happening, for example, in Central California, where I also lived, and I also lived in Northern and Southern California. My first, well, now I guess you can say half of my life was in California. So I have a lot of experiences there. So those made it into the Triangle series books for California. And then also in Oregon for a while I stayed. So, but yeah, so I don't know if Mark and Nancy, if you want to say anything or have any questions or anything regarding, because again, I know I haven't given you guys time to, I haven't even given you all the books first off, but let alone time to really read the first one. Well, let me kind of start here. Mark, did you by chance have a chance to read any of the Skagit Triangle?
Oh yeah, I did. Thank you. I
There you
like
go.
the idea of being able to explore the mysterious and hidden, and something that's just around the corner and you didn't know. And of course, in your area, that you have all of the sightings and the Sasquatch, and people do have gatherings and festivals there. I saw, like, with even with orbs, there was this picture. And I noticed you did have a Northern California one. And for me, having lived more in the bigger city areas, I do have my own triangles, but why did you use that theme of a triangle? And then you did have a Shungite triangle title for something, right?
Yeah, the triangle I went with. Well, I started just doing the research, looking into it, thinking, well, I'm going to write a book now about topics I'm interested in. All the, we'll jokingly make fun of it, call it the woo-woo stuff, the paranormal, as most of the listeners know, we're all into as well. So I started researching Skagit County, Washington, which, for those that don't know, is pretty much the most northern point in Washington State. There's a couple cities more north, like Bellingham, but Skagit County is the second county down, and I searched where. So right now I actually live in Concrete, Washington, but I've lived everywhere through Washington. So I started putting the stories together, and I thought, well, wait a minute now. And it just kind of popped in my head, thinking, I wonder if this would be a shape. So long story short, I got online, looked at the map, and started connecting the dots, and realized, lo and behold, it was basically a triangle. So I thought, well, I guess there's the name. So we'll, and then, it's kind of a play off the Bermuda Triangle, like I mentioned. And as I continued writing the various books, including the Seattle Triangle one and then the Spokane. So Spokane is the second largest city in Washington, and that's on the what we call the east side of Washington. And Seattle Triangle would be just south of Skagit County, where the first book was written. And they just started laying themselves out in triangle form as I did the research and found be it the ghost stories from underground Seattle, because for those that don't know, Seattle itself, due to earthquakes and lots of things, and it happened many, many years ago, and it's all in the book, there's an underground portion of Seattle that literally they give tours on. So you can go downtown Seattle, and there's various restaurants and bars and things that at certain times of the day or year, you can do the underground tours. And I explain more of that in the books, so you can find it there. But you go underground and there's whole, buildings, rooms, alleys. There's all kinds of stuff underground Seattle from the quake. And basically Seattle was built on top of that. So that was one of the interesting parts of it. And that all fell within that triangle that we're talking about. So that's kind of where the premise of the triangle series came, because everything. And then I thought, well, California is pretty large. And again, I've lived in all three vicinities from northern to central to southern. So I did the research and they each had their own triangles and it just kind of went on from there. And then maybe in the future, I'll have to chat with Mark and get some of his stories from or experiences from California. And well, I'm already on the, so if you buy it on, well, heck, the Skagit Triangle I'm talking about, either on cosmicshungite.com or Amazon, I've already updated it to the second edition just from the feed. So all the initial stories and whatnot are in there and experiences. But there were so many more as people find them or come in here to get a book signed from me or something like that. They say, well, did you know about this? And I'm like, nope, had no idea. So if they're interested enough and they kind of fall in the same genre or realm, I've been adding them in and then just doing updated versions. So anytime somebody orders a copy, you'll get the most recent version because they're selling out pretty quick. They're carrying them here at the local historical societies and a few of the museums now, and I don't know how many bookstores are carrying them as well. So we're cycling through them pretty quick. So then there's anytime they're bought, you'll pretty much end up with the latest edition. And I'll as again as I find out more stories or hear stuff from or feedback, I'll edit the editions and they'll so long story short, you'll always have the latest edition if you order on Amazon as well. Even for the versions I don't carry in store here. So I don't, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, what I like about these, the thing that unites all of these different places is, and you have different esoteric groups online and social media, is the breakaway civilization or the lost worlds and ancient technologies. I mean, Tartaria is the popular one that people hear about, and there's so many others in different names of, and that these churches, temples, religious sites, and cities are all connected to the ley lines, the energetic currents throughout the world. It's not by accident. They're placed in those areas, and then other buildings are built on top of them. Biogeometry is another one that has more of a practical application and energetic use of these things, and how you can use dowsing to extinguish the harmful ones and then use the healing ones. And your book does make those connections, and how it's not just a scattered thing, but that's why I think you use the triangle, is that not only is it like in the ether physics, but it's what connects all of these things, and why you have a lot of similar mysteries within these things. It's not just all random or chaotic. There is an order to a hidden structure that people can be a part of. And I think that's why you're offering them to the public.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because I will mention too, my first physical store location that was named Mystical Wares, and that was here in Mount Vernon, Washington. That I found out after the fact, and I had no idea when I was first leasing the building, was situated directly on a ley line. It actually took a couple of different customers to come in and tell me, "Well, Derek, did you know this?" I'm like, "Nope, I had no idea." You know, for those that do know me from previous podcasts, and definitely Nancy and Mark know, I go about 100 miles an hour, so I'm just going and going and going, so I don't often have time to slow down and put all the pieces together. I have that realization, or somebody points it out to me after the fact. And now, and just for an update on that too, I've since, well, closed the business called Mystical Wares, but what we did was relocate it only 2.5 miles away and rebranded it. So it's now called Bigfoot's Gems. And that's still in Mount Vernon, Washington, as I mentioned at the beginning. But I'm finding out this location is, I'd say, even more so energetic. And I have no idea yet because, again, I'm continually doing things, just juggling 50, well, minimum 50 things at once, seems like. So I haven't had a chance to do any research to see if this new building location is situated on a ley line, as they're called. But as far as energy wise, Oh yeah, it's all that and more of what the previous business and building was. So the new Bigfoot's Gems is, I don't think it was random either, and nothing is. It's not a coincidence. So it's yeah, and the feedback I'm getting on the new location is fantastic too, energy wise, because we're still, I mean, our main thing here, our product, what we sell is shungite. So I've even come up with new products and stuff. So, but yeah, it's really interesting. Then in that first book, I wrote a couple segments. I guess I'll just call them segments. I'm not sure what to call them. On the various cities I've lived in here in Washington, like the current one. But I tend to move a lot, as Nancy knows. But I'm currently in Concrete, Washington. And then again, Bigfoot's Gems is in Mount Vernon, and it's only about, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes distance. So it's a little bit of a commute, but that's what I do every day. And I've just found a ton of stories and phenomena that happened in this area. So Nancy, I don't know if you wanted me to bring up a couple of the segments or stories or the prison stuff and read a little bit of that. Now, we are still working through some technical issues here, I'll just tell everybody, because we're still figuring out our, because we haven't done a podcast in a while, so I'm all happy to be back, but we may have some delays on the microphones and speakers.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I've got you now.
It's not going through the Yeti for some reason. What I would like to ask you is, do you see some? You've looked at different places, different states now, with similar phenomena. Do you have any overview of what is behind it all?
That's a good question. I'll kind of preempt answering by telling you I had no idea about most of the different stories or segments, as I'm calling them, that had happened. I mean, I've known just from my travels and, living life and reading stuff and shows and movies and whatnot about some of them. But until I started doing the deep research on them all, I had no idea there's so many and that they did span, and as far as I can tell, it's going to be probably every single state. But as far as what's kind of the behind them or the cause or all of that, I'll just kind of summarize as I've mentioned before, but in a different way on other podcasts, that about 90% of our reality that we experience is metaphysical and about 10% is physical. So there's a whole lot more to our reality on the metaphysical perspective than physical. And that's what I've kind of learned researching and putting these books together, is that the UFOs, or Bigfoots, they don't know any state boundaries. That's not a thing, of course. Or continental boundaries or stuff like that. So other than the fact that it's a whole lot of metaphysical or what we often term paranormal, it's all over the place and doesn't have any boundaries. And that's so I kind of word it that way because these things do cross that, what I'll loosely call it a border of, because there's definitely not a boundary or border between the physical and metaphysical. So they cover both. So sometimes there's Bigfoots that are physically there being perceived, smelled, parts and pieces found. Same thing with the UFOs. It heard, seen, parts and pieces found. And then sometimes those either, we'll talk Bigfoot and/or UFOs or UAPs, sometimes they're called, cross back into the metaphysical aspects. So they disappear. They go off of our perception levels because, we're loosely, and I'll be kind of really loose with this term, we have the five senses, sight, taste, touch, smell, all that, and hearing. Well, we can perceive, especially when we're open to it, and especially when we integrate shungite into our lives by wearing it or using it, it helps enhance our metaphysical perceptions, as I call it. Because as I mentioned, again, I keep saying that, but I have mentioned it before, we're all intuitive. Every one of us, and that's a sense that we have. It's not an ability, and that sense can be enhanced. And back to Shungite, that's the biggest, I don't know how else to word it, but metaphysical sense enhancer. That was a mouthful. And that's what did it for me, was literally working with Shungite. It opened me up, and all of a sudden, just my I'll just call it psychic sense just started going off the charts. And I wasn't even into all that. So I was busy, being a commercial deep sea diver, a correctional officer, army guy, and everything else I've done. I wasn't necessarily looking into the paranormal or metaphysical aspects of reality at all, but I sure had to pay attention when that psychic sense got heightened again from Shungite. And then I'm like, well, okay, there's a whole lot more to this. And that's where also some of the prison stories I've already kind of loosely mentioned started, because that's where I was working at the time when I first got introduced to Shungite. And then those senses of mine started heightening, and I started perceiving a whole lot more. And it started, and that's was hope for a whole nother podcast on how that started. But yeah, then I realized that there's just so much more, and when you stay open to it and you can realize it, and also all the info's out there. So there's a ton of information on all of these things I talk about, and pick any one of the random 7 books I've now done. You can research more on it. They're in either, again, the government Project Blue Book files, or different research organizations, or history books sometimes, or some of them were at the historical societies of various states, whichever one we're talking about. There's a lot of that, where there's a lot of encounters, or what we'll call ghost stories and things. But most of these have multiple witnesses. They touch a lot of your senses, so it's not just that somebody sees something. Again, they'll smell it. Sometimes they'll touch it. And it's multiple people at once. So those are the ones that kind of caught my attention as well. So at least from my opinion, all these things can be, pick your book again, they can all be expanded on, because I keep finding so many more, stories that I'm being told. It's literally on a daily basis. Somebody came in the other day, and he says, well, it's kind of a secret. So I'll be kind of vague, but I only know so much right now anyway. But he said, it's kind of a local known secret. So I'm talking here in Skagit County, Washington again. But did you know about the Skagit Pyramid? And he didn't say triangle, he said pyramid. And he got on his phone and opened up. So we're just talking about an old timer here who's a prospector out in the woods here. So in this area, for those who don't know, it's the Cascade Mountains. So just deep forest everywhere. You drive a half an hour, you're in forest where you can't see more than, 50 foot through the trees for hundreds of miles, and buried out in this one area. Well, for those that are familiar with the area, it's out in the Mount Baker, which is a volcano. In that area, there's evidently I gotta keep saying it right now. So a Skagit pyramid, because again, I'm running so many things through my heads, and I keep talking pyramids and then triangles. And he kind of loosely showed me on the map where him and others have found it, where they're talking about. He talked about all kinds of unusual things. And when he brought up the map to me, he kind of, because his version of, I think he had Google Earth or something, he could do a 3D representation and kind of fly around the area. Oh, yeah. Well, the mountains did form a pyramid shape out there in that area. And he wasn't aware of that when they first started having his experiences and the others with him. They just knew it was really unusual, odd, not just sights and sounds, but feelings. And these were a group of guys that, weren't necessarily into energy work, or things like that. But they sure paid attention to the feelings of the forest in the area. And then when they were just, hanging out and talking about it kind of thing, they decided to go ahead and Google Earth it, and they realized, well, lo and behold, it's a pyramid shape in the middle of this small range area, I'll just say, so mountain range area. So I'm still gonna, and that'll be for, well, probably the third edition of Skagit Triangle, where, and he's gonna come back in and chat some more. He actually came in, and I never met the guy. He came in to get just a bunch of Shungite. So he's gonna Shungite grid, and we've talked about that in previous episodes, where basically we'll take Shungite powder or Shungite nuggets, and in his case, he got both, and is gonna go to those areas and just place some nuggets and or powder into the forest, under trees, into the rivers, creeks, streams, all of that, wherever they feel it needs it. to, in a positive way, affect the energies there. And then they found out that just having Shungite on themselves, just by coming in the store and grabbing a bracelet or a rock or something, who knows? Because there's a lot of stories that fit this part I'm telling you. They'll just come in and experience Shungite for the first time and realize its energetic abilities, and then realize, well, I'm going to go out and do this. And I said, did you already know that? So I was talking about that first gentleman and his friend that came in from the group in the Skagit pyramid explanation. I said, I already built something. Oh my gosh, I don't even know how many years ago I started it, but what I'm talking about is the Shungite grid, which, for those that don't know, there's, if you go to cosmicshungite.com, there's a link on there that says Shungite Grid Project or something like that. It'll be obvious. You can click on it and it'll take you to a Google map where it's probably 10 years now. Last time I looked, there were 50,000 different Shungite grid points that individuals, and I don't put these points on there. I just started it on my own, gifting Shungite to places to go, oh, there's a Google map. Let's go ahead and just put some little flags or little red dots on this map. It was a private thing. Nobody knew about it, just myself. And I realized, well, let's just share this. And we announced it on a podcast years ago. And then all of a sudden, I'd look back like 3 months later, and then there were like 10,000 points where people have gone on because you're able to, and you still are. And the link to the Shungite grid map is again on Cosmic Shungite. So you can go there, just follow the links. It'll open up a Google map for you, which is publicly accessible for free. And you can put your own point on there. So if you have Shungite yourself, or you've gone out Shungite gridded somewhere, you can point where you've done that. And they had no idea about the Shungite grid. So I was kind of, chuckling, waiting for him to finish telling his story about it. I'm like, well, you got to go here to where I just told you. And then, put the points on there that you're going to do. So they're going to be doing that. So they'll identify that Shungite, or Shungite, the Skagit Pyramid out there in the mountains here shortly, because I gave them the website link. But no, they had no idea about that. They just were intuitively led themselves to go Shungite gridding on their own, not even knowing that that had already been started, the Shungite Grid Project. Again, how many, probably 10 years ago now. So that was kind of interesting. And they're not the first ones to do that, but they're just the most recent. This was maybe 3 days ago or something. And I have to apologize if you guys hear noise in the background. The city is literally right outside my office in the road. I don't know. They're using a jackhammer right now. They're doing something with the utility lines. So if you hear that, that's what's going on. Hopefully it's not too disruptive. But yeah, I don't know if you guys had any other question.
I'm not hearing it.
Oh, you're not? Okay, well, good. I mean, he got really close just now, so I'm like, oh shoot, I thought they were done. But regardless, yeah, I mean, I can go over, unless you guys had, any questions or something else you want to talk about. I can bring up a few of the more personal or local stories that kind of kicked off this whole thing.
I guess for me, since the Labor Day weekend is coming up, and then with the back to school thing, people are going back to school. What are some highlights, maybe best buys that people can look forward to? I know for my work, I do drive a lot, and during vacationing, Airbnbs, those kind of things, I like using the Shungite rubber pad. That's always good for the long drives, for the back, and then for the seating area, and then when people go to hotels or like staying at a guest room, for me, I like using either the bracelets or just getting rocks and putting them in threes over like the shower head using tape, faucets, and then of course you have the stickers for if they have Wi-Fi in the room or a smart meter in the area, you could just tape it on and take off the tape. So that for me, you used to have a kit, I think, right? Maybe. A traveler's kit could be an idea sometime for these things I'm mentioning because I'm constantly using the same thing, like br extra bracelets I don't use. I put over the sink, shower head, and the bed, of course, because you have the metal springs. But then you said before that the rubber pad is kind of good enough for to counter any of the if EMFs tend to magnify because of the metal springs. But
Actually, I have some great feedback on that, but I'm going to have you two chat here for just a couple minutes because literally, and we're closed today, But a van just pulled up outside my store and they're delivering the next batch of books. So I apologize to the listeners, but I'm gonna have to step out just for a few minutes and I'll chime in right when I get back.
Yeah, I can just go off on some stuff since we haven't really been on air. Unless Nancy, you want to add some stuff that I just mentioned or what Derek was talking about?
Well, no, I guess, I was just listening to it, but it's interesting to me because I had started that audio book that would be made into a written book about my own personal experiences. Right now it's called Woo or something, but that was one of the things that when I started writing the book, I was like, well, I wonder how many other people have things like this happen to them, but they never talk about them. And obviously, there's a lot of things that happen out there that do get talked about, but people don't hear it. He's fine. He goes in and he says to the AI, give me any paranormal activity in this particular location. And then he follows those links to the actual document that talks about him. And I mean, he's putting these books out faster than I can even believe because he's leaning on AI to find the documents. But then he goes to the documents. I said to him, you're not plagiarizing, right? He said, no, I'm very careful about that. So he goes to the document that is discussing such and such. And then he, puts it into his own way of writing, which apparently to Irma was, pretty amazing. So we have that kind of a it's much bigger than any one of us could imagine.
And I'm back. Sorry about that.
I was just saying how you ask AI for the paranormal and then you go to the documents that actually talk about it and then you digest it and give it to people as a story.
Yeah. That's the beauty of using AI is because I can say, okay, well, find what's already been put out there and blah, blah, blah. And then it brings up again the Project Blue Book files or whatnot. And then I basically, and that's what I was mentioning. So kind of easier, these books kind of write themselves because the information's there. I just rewrite it into more of a story form, so it's a little more entertaining, and then I
Well,
research other
yeah,
parts.
I suggest to people that you go and do exactly what he did. Take the area of, like, let's say you live in Massachusetts, say, AI, tell me give me the list of paranormal things that have happened in Massachusetts, or even make it Western Massachusetts, Eastern, because I was saying that I had started my own book about my own experiences, but my question while I was writing it was, how many other people have these kind of experiences, but they don't even remember them or acknowledge them, and they never talk about them? And that it is, makes me feel confident that there is stories out there that in any place that you live, and it might be just fun for you to see what's around you.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to wait for me to publish the whatever, the Utah Triangle book, and I will be doing all that in all of them, but anybody can just jump online nowadays and find different things. Now, like I mentioned though, granted, especially if it brings up like the Bigfoot ones, you're going to see a few sentences or maybe a paragraph or something or a UFO one. It'll vary depending on what topic we're talking about and the witness reports, be it government files, because I've had to scan through hundreds of those and find, because I don't include them all. I'm just trying to include the more interesting ones where there's maybe more information or, again, multiple witnesses. So, yeah, it's anybody can, jump online if they're interested in their specific area. And don't be shy, send me an email message or something via the website of what you got. And, potentially I'll include it in your state's version of the Triangle series.
And you'll probably bring people out that never talked about events that they went through.
But I'm
Well,
glad
now
you
that
mentioned
you
that.
mentioned it.
Yeah, well, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned that, because then anybody is also welcome to send me. And probably the best email would be contact@bigfootsgems.com, because then I'll get alerted to it pretty quickly. You can just send it there, your own personal story or whatnot. And yeah, you might be reading about your own encounter in one of the Triangle series books. That's a great point. I can jump into what Mark brought up real quick too, before we get too far past it, because he had mentioned so. Regarding Shungite and things, because there have been, and this won't take too long, everybody, and we can get back into the books, but I don't, and here's the other problem is I don't remember since our last podcast if I've had some of this available. For example, the Shungite patches. So it's like Nancy mentioned, is what I'm trying to say, at the beginning of the show, how she had started working again with Shungite rubber. Well, what I've done is developed smaller ones, because we had Shungite rubber in little ovals before. So thin, I'm trying to think about what I can even compare it to, but they're just thinner pieces that are round. So I've made them a little bit smaller, and I call them Shungite patches. And I provide adhesive patches to go over it. So basically, if you're having a physical ailment or injury, or like your leg isn't feeling well, really anywhere, you can take these Shungite patches, place them in that area, and then I provide again the self-adhesive patches that you can put right over it so it holds it in that area. Because until I did that, it was basically, think like a mouse pad size, and some of them were longer. I'm talking about the Shungite rubber sizes and shapes. They were, yeah, you could sit on them, you can put them here, there, wherever. But if you wanted to, go about your day all day long and keep that on there, and as of a month ago, there's several, as and I was told this from another podcaster, several NFL players that are using these. They've been ordering from us, and they didn't mention who they. I went back and looked to verify, and it was a thing. And trainers for that, for different athletes, have been buying the Shungite patches, because evidently a pretty known podcaster had ordered some, not telling me who he was. It was just another name, another order coming in from my perspective. And then sent him out, and then he had such great results that he chatted about it on his podcast, and it went out to just tens of thousands of people. And he's a NFL something trainer. I don't remember the exact term. And then so they've been doing really well. So that's kind of tying into what Mark was mentioning. That's one of the products that are good and you can use. And again, if you have a back issue, you can now adhere Shunga, and there may be, I don't know, 2-inch diameter, and they're really thin, the Shungite patches. And then there's a just a an adhesive, basically like a sticker, it's made for your skin, that you can put over it to keep it in that spot. So that's one of the new things that have come out. We've also, just to kind of make note of it real quickly, since because we used to sell for years Shungite powder and nuggets in, I don't know, little smaller 4-ounce bags, and it was, you get so many of them in there and things, but now we've got little mini buckets that are, so basically you can buy, it's almost exactly 1 pound of either Shungite powder, fine Shungite powder, or Shungite nuggets in these little mini buckets. And the buckets are reusable. They have a little handle, just kind of think like a normal 5-gallon bucket with a handle, but mini sized. So we sell it in that volume now. So you get a whole lot more and lower the prices. So now, be it if you want to make your own Shungite paint, one of those little, I'm reading it now, fine Shungite powder mini buckets will make 5 gallons, which is a huge amount of paint. You can paint several rooms with that, say, of Shungite paint. And then for those that don't know, yeah, it's gonna, when you add the powder to the paint, it's gonna change the color in a little bit, but use it as the primer. Just paint over it. So prime your room with Shungite paint, and then paint whatever color you want your actual room to be over that. And it doesn't dampen the effects of the Shungite paint by putting another layer of paint over it either. So I just kind of wanted to point that out. And then one other thing I'll mention quickly too is we've recently made available what I'm calling large natural Shungite specimens. So I've got just huge, think almost boulder size. Some of these will go up to 5 pounds. They're of course random, and I weigh each one. So as I cycle through them on the website, you'll see not just a pound of smaller nuggets in the bucket I'm talking about, but you can buy one big piece ranging everywhere from a 1 pound itself up to over 5 pounds. And that's the size of the Shungite nuggets I've been using now in, and I show this to people every day, our Shungite pond that I've talked about before, which is that 300-gallon pond we have in Bigfoot's Gems full of koi fish and other fish with no filtration system, nothing whatsoever, other than a couple of those Shungite specimen pieces I'm talking about. So we'll get people walking over that don't know Shungite, and they go, "What do you do with your pond? I can't keep my pond clean," and this, that, and the other. So I kind of smile, and I point down in there, I see that big black rock on the bottom. That's all I use. Because Shungite removes everything, and I won't get into the whole spiel, but of course, it has an effect on glyphosate, which is a Roundup weed killer, which is in much of the water systems everywhere, unfortunately. But chlorines, fluoride, all sorts of things that are in our drinking water that we don't want. Shungite has an effect on all of those. So that's why it's so beneficial to have in a, I don't care if it's just your fish tank at home or, several 100-gallon pond like we have in the store, or a lake or creek, river, whatever. So that's another thing that we started providing online. And one other now, but Mark was mentioning, so as far as school and whatnot, it would be, we've got several of the versions of the 3, 6, and 9 day tumbled pendants. So that's where I'll take some of the about 2 inch long Shungite nuggets and tumble them in pure silver. And again, for those that don't know, that's what we call cosmic Shungite when I've blended it with silver. And usually it's going to be nuggets that I put in a rock tumbler, which is hundreds of little tiny silver bars, and that's the tumbling medium. And I say 3, 6, and 9 because some I leave in there for 3 days, take them out, some 6 days, and some 9 days. And there's a whole explanation behind that and why the difference in days on the website, as well as for those, because I know in the past there's been just hundreds of questions about Shungite, and it's hard to answer them all or to remember what's been asked or anything like that. So in the past couple of weeks, if you go to cosmicshungite.com, either on your phone or computer, you'll see a little box on the bottom right that says Ask About Shungite. And if someone clicks on that, you're going to see it's probably darn near 100 now. So think FAQ, so frequently asked questions that I've put together. And so you click on that little box or a little, it looks like an oval shape, it'll open up all the questions everybody has already asked. And you'll have the opportunity to ask your own question and submit it to where I'll answer it and put it in the database through that Ask About Shungite button that I'm talking about on the website. So that's something new that has come as well. So if you're wondering, well, how do we use Shungite with plants, animals, myself, water, it goes on and on. I answer in depth all of those questions on there. So a lot of the stuff we've put out over probably hundreds of podcasts now. So that's a new aspect of the website I wanted to mention too. And I don't know that I've even told Mark. Go ahead.
I really want people to. It is coming up on school time, and you should think of Shungite as a school supply, because they're going into a highly electromagnetic, poisonous environment with the computers and all the other garbage that might be right there, and you can protect your child from that with Shungite. And there's a lot of different ways you can do it. You can take a piece of cosmic Shungite rubber and cut a piece out and put it in your child's shoes. You can take, I don't know, do you still have the buttons, the pins?
Not online, just in store, but we have the like think keychain. Sometimes they're in the shape of a little unicorn or a heart or whatnot that can be used either as your cat or dog tag on their collar or put one on your kid's backpack or something like that.
And the kids can wear the bracelets and the depending on the child, how old they are. But you really shouldn't send your kid off to school without the Shungite. Why? Well, because it's going to protect them from the electromagnetic fields that they're being surrounded with. Well, how do they do that? Well, they just alter the way that the spin is on the electromagnetic, And that normal spin it is going contrary to the cells in your body. So at a minimum, you're going to be agitated. And kids get agitated in school, they can't concentrate. So if you send them off, if you want them to learn something, send them off with shungite so that their bodies will not be responding to the electromagnetic poisonous environment. Their bodies will be in a state of normal, even though this environment was there, it's been changed because of the shungite, and now it's normal. The stuff rotating around you is rotating the same way your cells are. You don't get the agitation. You can concentrate. You can learn. So for
Yeah.
school, get shungite.
I'm glad you brought that up because this is a good point to let people know. Again, on cosmicshungite.com, I've greatly expanded the Shungite science page. So if somebody goes there, clicks on that link, it'll bring up a whole new website I've developed where there's over 105 studies now. Again, scientific studies, not just me doing it here and describing this, that, and the other. These are legit studies, and one of them proves, well, I think we all know by now that, and it is also proven as well, that cell phones, Wi-Fi, 5G, all these different frequencies in our environment affect us physiologically. They'll affect our cortisol levels, which is a stress hormone, your heart. It affects your heart rate variability. And if you talk with a cell phone up against your head, against your ears, it affects your tympanic membrane, your eardrum temperature. Well, one of the studies that I've expanded on the Shungite Science page proves, and they've replicated it now as well, which is a great thing. So now it's a double, been done twice, where all you have to do is have a, what they did, they had a various ways they did it, and all of them worked, be it a pendant around your neck, a bracelet on your arm, something in your shoe. Either way, when they introduced Shungite to the person's biofield or their aura, it not only normalized their heart rate variability, which would be the time in between your heart rates, and you can look that up more if you're interested, or read the study because it spells it out, but also your cortisol levels, which is a stress hormone, which I don't know about you guys, but I was sure stressed when I started school, or I did a lot of moving, so I changed schools a lot, or of course we all change grades every year. That can be stressful. So literally, it's been proven introducing Shungite to your environment on your body literally not only restores all of those normal levels, but makes you stronger. And that's what was said in the study. It not only brought you back and reversed the harmful or negative effects of those frequencies, but made you stronger by introducing Shungite to you. So that's a really cool study. And we've talked about it before, but it's featured on that Shungite Science page. So, and even just the abstract, if you read the abstract of the study, it spells it all out, where it can't really be, disqualified. It absolutely has an effect on all of those aspects that I just mentioned. So that's a really good idea for, especially like Mark mentioned, we're starting school soon. And yeah, stress is a thing. And even if you're not in school, you're out of school. Well, we all have cortisol. We all have cortisol levels that can be evened out or improved on. And that's one thing Shungite can do.
Well, the best science report I ever heard on Shungite in the schools was from, he's probably 9 years old, maybe 10. I don't remember their exact age. And my partner in Shungite at the time had a daughter. And she said to her mom, "Can I give a pendant to my friend?" I think his name was Daniel. And so, yeah, sure, here, take this and give it to him. So she gives it to him. And when he got out of school that day, his mother said, "How was your day?" And he said, "It was marvelous." He said, "I got this pendant and it's got this stuff in it, shungite, they call it. And it makes me feel like a superhero." He said, myself and Jordan, the little girl that gave it to him, when they sat down with the computers, all of a sudden, every kid in the classroom was looking at him. Now, all they had done is sit down, but they had the shungite on them. And the shungite from them actually affected the computer system. And the kids picked up on it. And so it's not just a matter of your child being better for it. Everybody in that room will be better for it.
Oh yeah, it's not just limited to the person wearing it. Anybody in that general vicinity will have an effect or feel it. Again, that's how they walk in the door here at Bigfoot's Gems and instantly feel it and the energy aspects of the place. And they're not like jumping on a pile of shungite when they walk in. No, they'll just feel it right away and then get led over there. And it's very common for somebody to walk up to the counter or the cash register with this. Usually, almost always, one of the tumbled cosmic shungite nuggets, either the 3, 6, or 9 day one, and have no idea what it is. And they're buying it. I'm like, do you know what you're getting? Because usually they'll ask me a question if they already know about it or they know who I am or something like that. So if the person doesn't, I'll kind of pause there for a minute. I'm waiting. I'm like, well, why did you choose that? And they go, I don't know. It just felt really good, or it had this effect on me, or it sent shivers up and down my body when I touched it. And so there's different ways they'll describe it, but it's really cool from my perspective when a non-Shungite person walks up with one of those and just gives me the exact same, almost verbatim, feedback on the effect it had on them. So it's really neat.
Yeah, it's also keeping in mind that there's a reason why hospitals, schools, and prisons have the same architecture. I think biogeometry was one of the people, the organizations that brought that up. And you just have this compounding mass poisoning of the blue lights, and then you got the Wi-Fi in the school, and then you got those tall towers around the school, and then the EMFs from the screen, the blue artificial blue light, and then you have the light that's coming down from the ceiling, and then who knows if their windows are even open or not, because that would help with the red light that we would need. So then, if somebody has something that would even slightly improve their biofield, then of course everybody's going to notice. And then the important thing with your store is a lot of the more important items is shungite and silver. So I think because you have all of these influencers now selling shungite, but nobody has the silver in them. And it doesn't even have to be expensive. So if price is an issue, people can get the resin keychains and pendants, which is like $12. And that has the shungite and silver is in the resin, like keychain thing. And I've given those as presents and things for people to bring, when they're out in the world. And aside from those things I mentioned, you have the cosmic rays coming up, the solar flares, the whatever different cosmic rays. So you just have all of these things. And I've likened it to having different layers to harmonize. I mean, you have the same thing of biohacking. And so what about bioharmonizing? So I think that's more of a grounded, balanced, and centered way of walking the world is. You give us these very simple tools of beingness and presence, and people just pick it up, and you can do whatever it is you need to do a lot more effortlessly. So, yeah, back to school stuff. I mean,
Well,
for
for
me,
teachers too, teachers, get some of the shungite stickers, and where you got a router or a main electric system coming into the classroom, put one of those stickers on it. Your life is going to be a lot better because the kids aren't going to be stressed out, nor will you. So, I mean, if we can get more teachers involved in we, I mean, we've had teachers that did this and they saw the response. So it, if you're a teacher, a teacher, gift them with some shungite stickers and tell them just do this. See if your class doesn't, tell them it's a test. We're testing out to see if it helps kids. And, you don't have to get into all the, explanation of it. Just say, just stick it on there and see if the kids don't feel better.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. And we were recently able to lower the prices on the cosmic shungite nuggets as well. So you can get them for as low as $15 now. And that's, again, the ones that we tumble in pure silver for 3, 6, or 9 days. So they're a little more accessible. Though I do want to mention one other thing that I don't think we've talked about since the last podcast. I don't know if I've even mentioned it to you, Nancy, but a lot of us have, of course, pets. and especially cats. So I've come up with a, I call it the Shungite Organic Cat Grass Kit. So it's on the website so people can look at it. But basically, there's a type of grass, and it's different forms of wheat and oats and things, but you don't let it grow to full size. So I basically send you a little pot, so like a planter pot with the seeds for organic, and it's all organic, of course. Cat grass and cats, and I tested this on my cat first, of course, because I, you know, I'd heard of catnip and different things like that. And then I did some research. I'm like, it's got to be something else. And I came across what's called cat grass. So, and it, they'll, it looks like, and again, I'm looking at a picture of it, and you can go to the website and look, but we'll send you the little pot with a packet of hundreds of cat grass seeds and shungite powder. And I think we even throw in a little cat toy. But basically, you just plant these seeds and they're going to pop up. It kind of looks like a chia pet thing. So you let it get, you know, 4, 5, 6 inches up. And I had to move the thing away from my cat because it kept just yanking the cat grass out of there. Your cats will actually, and it's really good for them. There's a big description on the website about it.
It's not just wheatgrass.
No, well, no, well, it's not just wheatgrass. No, it's a blend of various ones, but that's in general what they'll call cat grass. So it's a
Right,
blend
because
of,
wheatgrass, cats will go nuts over wheatgrass.
it is, yeah, and that's what it is as well. So yes, there are wheatgrass seeds in there as well. It's a blend, but then you add the Shungite powder, and then yeah, they'll, and I didn't know that, but apparently you did, Nancy. And my cat was just yanking these little shoots out. Or again, it looks like grass out of there, just eating them. And so now I just kind of have to relegate the Shungite cat grass pot to a shelf where the cat can't get to, and just yank out a few pieces of it every day or whatnot and put it down for them. Oh yeah, they go, I had no idea. And it's not just regular grass, everyone, because you don't see cats grazing in your front yard eating grass. No, and it's not a tummy thing. They're not doing it to, because some dogs and cats will eat grass to, you know, make themselves regurgitate because maybe they're having a tummy problem. That's not what this is. This is really good for them. It's great for their digestion,
Well, I
all
bet
sorts
it's
of
good
things.
for humans.
It's edible, 100% would be. And then again, with the benefit of adding, because we include, like I mentioned, a bag of Shungite powder, put that in there. This stuff grows, you know, pun intended, like weeds. So it just shoots up and you can keep replanting it with the abundance of seeds I provide. And like I said, well, you can give a little natural cat toy in it, but I mean, $12. And you can do this whole thing in just hundreds and hundreds. I don't count the seeds because they're too small. So I just put a bunch of them in the baggies and provide them with it. And then put it in, on your windowsill. And within a couple days, not weeks, a couple days, they're going to start sprouting and growing like grass. And then, yeah, your cats will just go crazy over it. That was just something new to me because, you know, I'd tried growing catnip before. And, you know, some cats respond to that, some don't. Well, I have yet to find a cat that doesn't respond to the cat grass, which, yes, like you mentioned, is, it can come in various forms from wheats to oats, but it's those type of grains while they're small. So they'll be, I don't know, 3, 4 inches long and just look like a piece of grass. But, you know, hundreds grown at once in this little pot. So that's
Very
a,
cool.
yeah, that's a new product that we put online. And I thought, well, we need to get some Shungite things in here for the animals, not just the cat and dog tags that Mark even mentioned earlier, that yes, you can put on your kids' backpacks or whatnot, but you know, or your cats or dogs' collars, but in this form as well. And one more thing, as I keep saying, just one more. I don't know if we've mentioned, but I've come up with something I call the Shungite Energy Lens that might even be really good for kids to have. It's where I take a Shungite palm stone. So that oval shape, for those who don't know, a palm stone, it's about 3 inches long and maybe, I don't know, a quarter inch thick that you can put right in the palm of your hand. And I take what's called liquid crystals and I put those on the palm stone. I put a stainless steel ring around it and a little resin over it. So now what you think, so visualize for those of you that know what a mood ring is, what liquid crystals do is they'll respond to energy or heat transfer. So I've got a Shungite energy lens. So the palm stone with it has that liquid crystals right in the middle, surrounded by a stainless steel, just a ring, you can say, to give it that boundary and adhere it to the Shungite. You put it in your palm, and in seconds, it'll start changing colors. So we have these on display in Bigfoot's Gems to where people walk up and put it on their palm. And then we give you a little printout as well to give you a loose idea of, well, what is green? Because it'll cycle through the full spectrum of the rainbow depending on the energy and or heat emitting from your, if you got it in your palm, but you can put it on. Some people walk in, just stick it right to their forehead and then see what color it turns. So the little printout we give you will give you a loose definition of what you can apply. And I'll tell you, your intention's a big part of it, as anything is. So of what it would represent. And it changes colors. And one lady will walk up and put it in her hand, it'll go and turn to blue. And some it'll stay a rainbow hue. Some will go green. It'll just vary. So that's kind of a cool little thing. And I thought it might be fun for kids to have, because then they can have it, that piece of shungite on them, but yet pull it out for their friend and say, put it in your hand. And all of a sudden, depending on who's holding it, it'll cycle through different colors and sometimes multiples at once. So like those, old 70s mood rings that would break in about a week after you bought them, sort of thing. But this is a shungite version of that, again, that I call the shungite energy lens. So they're kind of fun to take out and show people, or if you're, kids, show your friends. And then it's an interactive shungite tool as well. And then again, always back to the benefit of having shungite around you. Well, then you've got it with you. And that might be a way to encourage, the young ones to keep it with them, because then it's fun as well.
Well, before we finish the show, you want to tell us what your favorite woo-woo story was?
Well, because they kind of hit home, were mine, the ones at the prison. And I'm not gonna go reading all of them or anything like that, but maybe I'm just kind of skimming through right now. That one's pretty long too. So I think I'll just end up summarizing. But one of them in there that is in the Seattle Triangle book, as I mentioned earlier, the story is called The Spiral and the Silent Helicopter. So we've talked about that on various podcasts and parts and pieces before, but basically, and I don't remember the exact year, but it was 2012. It had to be 2012. So in 2012, I was it's called a perimeter officer, perimeter correctional officer, again, Washington State Reformatory. So at that time, I was the guy on the outside of the prison on graveyard shift, driving around in the vehicle. It's called a rover. So basically, I'm just driving in circles all night around the prison, making sure, believe it or not, that nobody breaks in or out, because it goes both ways. Yes, believe it or not, you get people trying to break into prison or going up to the prison gate to throw something over it. That would be, a package of a lot of things that an inmate the next day would pick up. Sometimes a cell phone, sometimes drugs, sometimes a weapon. I mean, I won't get into all those stories, but there were lots of scenarios where we would have civilians, as you would call them, coming up, try and break the perimeter, border there and go up and put something in there. So it was, this story is one of the ones, and I'm not going to read it, I'm just going to kind of give you the gist of it. Is when I was on graveyard shift, it was 2 or 3 in the morning, as a lot of this stuff tends to happen. And it was a full moon night. That was a great thing for this story because it fit really well. It made everything more visible. And WSR, it's called, Washington State Reformatory, is just out in the forest. So it's out in the hills. Doesn't have big high rises around it or anything like that. So, and this happened many nights, but this one particular night, I was driving on the perimeter, just doing my rounds, probably listening to a podcast or Coast to Coast or who knows what at the time. And I kind of looked off. And I realized something. So, and the moon was back behind it, so I could see pretty really well lit. And all of a sudden, I start seeing a spiral come out of one of the nearby hills. It was probably, I don't know, several hundred yards away, so it wasn't right on my perimeter, but it was clear as day. It was really close, especially for the size of what I saw. But what I saw coming out of the little nook between these couple hills right there was a spiral of what looked like smoke. Now, when I say spiral, I'm trying to think about how to even explain this. Think like a slinky or a spring, but not just even from the top to the bottom. It was narrow, kind of like a funnel, on the bottom. So it would, the smoke, and it looked like smoke to me, would come out of the ground, and it had to be huge because, again, that's from my perspective, that distance was a couple hundred yards away. So if it was small, I wouldn't even have seen it. But it started coming up, and it wasn't just, oh, vaguely a spiral or anything. Oh, it kind of looks that way. No, it was like it was literally chiseled out the smoke into a spiral form. So it started coming out, tapering at the bottom, and then continued upward for several hundred yards into the air as well. A very distinct spiral as it spun around going up. And I'd sit there and watch that. And that happened for several days. But I'm going to get into why I'm talking about this one instance of it. So it would all of a sudden come up and start going up. And I didn't, there's no planes over there. There were no, I could see the ground clear enough. There were no people around there. There was no bonfires, nothing like that. I had a really good view of it. And I would just sit there going, what in the heck? It wasn't like there was some unusual fog formation because it wasn't a foggy day. But this spiral would just start emanating from the spiral of smoke. Remember, I'm just calling it smoke. I don't know what it was, but that's what it looked like. And it was white and going up. And then we got wider as it continued up. So again, in like a cone shape going down. And then all of a sudden, you would see light through it, just through the middle. And I saw no craft. There wasn't some orb that popped out of this or something like that. Nothing that I saw, at least. And it would do that and it'd stay there for many minutes. And then it would just kind of dissipate. And I was like, well, that's pretty weird. That's unusual kind of thing. So I would watch that and it would happen loosely. I wasn't exactly timing it because I didn't think it was ever going to happen again, but it would start happening on a daily basis for some time. And then one, just after a couple of days of seeing that, again, middle of the night or early morning, however you want to word it, that 2, 3-ish time frame, all of a sudden I'm watching it. And then I'm pulled over, so I stop the car and I stay on my perimeter area because that's my job. I'm supposed to stay alert and see if somebody's coming over, this, that, and the other. So technically, I'm still doing my job at this point, and I'm watching it. And then all of a sudden, I hear, I'm like, "What is that?" And I start hearing a helicopter, and it, you know, it's distinct helicopter sound. You know, we all know what helicopters sound like, but I can't see them. So I'm like, and it was still full moon night. So I'm like, "Okay, well, that's a little weird." So then all of a sudden, and there's a tree line even closer, just off to the side. So I could see between, I'm trying to give you a visual, see between these different tree lines that would border the security perimeter. And in that area between the tree lines is where I would see that little nook of hills where I saw the spiral. And so I heard the helicopter and my engine's off. I'm just sitting there parked looking out, and I'm all alone because you do this post, as it's called, alone. And the towers aren't manned at night, so I'm literally the only perimeter security at the time. And I'm hearing a helicopter. I'm like, that's kind of weird because there's not supposed to be aircraft anywhere near a prison. And I'm talking about all prisons. That's a no-fly zone. I don't care if you're military or anything like, you don't fly, because there have been instances where, believe it or not, planes and helicopters illegally flew over my prison as well while I was there, and fly over and throw things out of them. Again, packages for the inmates when they get released to the big yard, it's called. So just think they're, I'll call it their playground, where they get to go out during the day for some hours and they'll go pick up the package that whoever illegally flew over threw the package of whatever the paraphernalia was, you know, that shouldn't be there, and collect it. So then we have to watch out for that kind of stuff because that's not unknown. So I thought, okay, is this happening again? Did somebody's cousin who has a license to fly, you know, go, you know, bring his chopper over here and blah, blah, blah. So I sat there waiting, and I have my cell phone. So it's the days of cell phones, and I have video, so I'm getting ready to record it, but I don't see anything yet. So I still hear the helicopter, and then all of a sudden, in off in the distance, the tree line, I see a black helicopter, and it's an Apache. I'm ex-army guy, so I know what I'm looking at. And it was light enough out there, again, full moon night. So all of a sudden I see an Apache. Not just an Apache flying, this thing was flying just a couple feet above the trees because I could see the trees all kind of moving or shaking with the rotor wash of them. And I'm like, well, and I think we call, what do we call that? Oh, map of the Earth. And when choppers fly that low, so they're staying, trying to stay below radar. They're trying to do stuff like that and not be seen, because you can see stuff flying from a distance, of course, but not when they're that low. So that was really unusual. And I see this chopper flying over the trees. coming straight over the prison, which is a big no-go anyway. And if they were going to do that, I'm the first guy that was supposed to be alerted so that I don't start calling a code. It's called a code if something happens, and then they start scrambling other officers with different emergency gear and stuff out of the prison to back me up or deal with whatever it is. And that's why they would let me know that, or to keep the radio traffic silent so I don't announce this is happening. None of that happened. So nobody knew this was happening. And all of a sudden, this Apache flies over the tree line, again, really low. And I notice, I'm like, well, and it's coming straight at me. And I'm like, what the heck is this all about? So I just sit there watching it. And then all of a sudden, there's a second one. I'd say not more than, I don't know, maybe 20 feet at most, right behind it. And then a third one. And they should not be flying that close, as far as I was concerned. I was like, well, I don't know how they're even doing that. That's just some superb skills, because you'd think the rotor wash would throw the other one off, but they were that close together. And then the interesting part is, if that wasn't odd or interesting enough, and by the way, they were all unmarked. There wasn't one number on that thing, not an army sticker on there, no unit identification code, nothing. They were just completely black, as far, and they were so low, and they flew directly over me, which is where, again, the interesting part comes. The first one went over. I could hear it plain as day. The rotor wash was there and all of that. The second one had zero sound. It had nothing whatsoever. And by this time, I already had my phone out and I was hitting record, because I was like, well, this shouldn't be happening, so I better get it on video, and I'll talk to the commanding officer about it and stuff like that, and just let them know. But all of a sudden, the second one was dead silent. And that really grabbed my attention, because I was like, how is this even possible? There was no noise, there was nothing on it. And I knew they were manned because the moon was behind him at this perspective. So meaning I could see through and they were so low, I could see through the cockpit, and I could see, little guy's head in there with a helmet, in the actual cockpit. So and I was the but only and then the third one had sound. So only the middle one was 100% silent, and there was no mistaking it, because they had that big enough gap and they're so close to me that it was like, I don't even know how it was there. It was literally like it was just hovering. It looked like it had a rotor to me, though. I mean, so it looked no different than the other two, but zero sound and no rotor wash coming down or anything from it as it passed over. And then the third one came back to normal. I could hear the engine, I could hear as it was getting closer. And they were all three in a line heading towards that spiral. And that's again what really caught my attention. So I can't really get to the answer for anybody, but I'll tell you there are. And after that, I had done some research and found out that I don't remember where it was or which podcast or whatever, but somebody had mentioned something about silent helicopters, and I didn't know anything about it, and I don't know that I would have really believed it anyway, because they make noise. There's a big rotor up there. They're noisy things. I used to be on helicopters. They'd fly me on a helicopter all the time to offshore oil rigs when I was a commercial deep sea diver. So I'm very familiar with helicopters and the noise they make, and it's enormous, and the rotor wash and all of that. But that second one, again, would be what many of you may have heard on different podcasts or read about, a silent helicopter. So they absolutely exist. Couldn't tell you any more how they did it. That one was unmarked as well, but they shot straight over towards that spiral, in the mountainside. And I don't know what they did from there, because once they got over there, it starts to get a little bit out of sight. You could tell they went over there, but I didn't see anybody jumping out or anything. But they were absolutely going to inspect whatever the spiral thing was. And the spiral diameter, by the time you got to the top of it, had to be at least 100 plus feet wide. So it wasn't small. These choppers could have like landed if they'd wanted to. I'm not saying they did. If they'd wanted to go down in it, it was wide enough for them to go down into the spiral. So it's not, again, a little tiny thing. It was relatively large, and they went over in that direction. So what I did, because on things like this, we're not supposed to, as officers, announce it on the radio right away, because every unit has an officer on the inside. And sometimes those officers are doing what's called a tier check. They're walking up to the doors, the cells, to either count the inmates, make sure they're still living, breathing, flesh, it's called, to make sure they're alive or they haven't tried to escape. And that would come over the radio. So you don't necessarily announce everything over the radio. It's dependent. So this sure didn't go over the radio right then. I drove over to, there's an exterior phone at one of the guard towers, as they're called, jumped on there. And at one point later in another instance, I did get on the radio for describing it. But initially, it was just getting on the phone and calling the officer, lieutenant in charge. And I was disregarded completely. They said, basically said, thank you. Go back to your patrol. Didn't acknowledge anything, didn't ask me any more questions. And I wrote it all in, and it's a government logbook you have on these posts, including my perimeter post. So a small, just a literal physical paper book that you can't edit. You don't, it's written in there, it's in the official logbook. So I noted the entire circumstance or incident in that logbook in 2012, and tried to get some feedback on it, but nothing ever came back to me on that. So it's literal government documented now. And I think I probably have photos of that as well. You can't keep the book because every month or so they come out and confiscate the books from every post, including mine, and they go into archives, and that's just a prison record for what happened on the unit that day, or in my case, the perimeter. So that sure made it into that documented book that's, I don't know where, whose hands that ended up in, but that was one of the stories I get into in the Seattle Triangle book, and one of the circumstances. There were others that I'll leave you guys to read, but I'll kind of note one of them real quickly here just to spark interest. But another one was the Baker Unit Ghost. So when I say Baker Unit, so B Unit, they called it Baker Unit, where in the military it's usually called Bravo, but in state systems it's Baker. So it was, and that started long before my time, to where people would all of a sudden talk about, or they'd, tell the new hires, the new correctional officers, if they worked Baker Unit that night, at WSR is where it was again, that, well, we've had all these stories from not just officers, but inmates, and they call him the Baker Unit Ghost. And I go into that whole story because, again, probably not the right place to get too in depth in that now, but not always good things happen in prisons, of course, as you can imagine. So sometimes inmates are killed in there and stuff happens. And so that's the premise that the inmates, at least, and the officers believed was it was a certain inmate that was killed in there in the prison in a not great way. And he ended up becoming what we call the Baker Unit Ghost. So he would appear and you would see him walking down the tiers. All of a sudden, a door would shut that. And they're all locked up because remember, I work graveyard. There's no inmates walking around doing anything. They're all in their cells. So if there's something happening, it's an officer or something else. So we would have circumstances like that where you would hear somebody walking up the tier stairwell. I'm trying to get it descriptive enough so people can understand, but we call it different things there. But there's spiral stairs because this was a 100-plus-year-old prison, like I mentioned. So there's a lot of nooks and crannies and unusual spots that nobody can be unless you have a set of keys. You can only go so far in a prison, and then you got to have your keys that are always in your hand. You don't ever set these keys down as an officer. That's one of the biggest no-nos. So to get from A to B, and then you got to lock that door, then you go a little bit further, unlock that door. So you're segmented everything. And then we would have one of the, it gets into the story more in the book, but all of a sudden you'd hear some inmates just screaming and yelling from, it's called the fourth tier, let's just say. So I think four stories, and it just kind of goes straight up in this type of prison, and the cells are all in there. And then you'd hear that somebody was just standing by them, or they woke up and there was a person, and the inmates would be going crazy. They'd just be like, I don't know what it was, because they're just not aware. So there's some of those stories in there as well, where the Baker Unit Ghost, where inmates would be screaming about get me out of this cell because I saw this, that, and the other, or the officers. There would be something moving on the desk, or something, a door shutting that we know is locked because we have just think a console that lights up and all kinds of buzzers go off if something was to be open that shouldn't be, especially on graveyard. We know it, because even though it's an old prison, it's been incrementally updated with alarms and sensors and cameras, all sorts of stuff. So we would be alerted. Well, we'd have one go off or a door shut. And I'm talking about the big steel doors with bars that you can maybe imagine in, well, the Butterfly Effect movie. I forget what his name was, the actor in that one. But that was filmed at my prison where I worked. So if you go back and look at segments of that, you'll get an idea of the type of prison I'm talking about. Just one of those old school, just steel bar prisons, where there's big gates everywhere and they're all hundreds of pounds each. And they take big Folger Adams keys, they're called, to open. So it's a massive key. It's probably a quarter pound in weight, just really big thing, to open these. And then we'd hear the door shut and maybe alarm would go off and nobody's there, or, it just goes on. So that's one of the other interesting stories that I included in. I don't remember what that one's called. It's probably called Baker Unit. I'm sure it is. I'm looking right now. Yeah, it's called B Unit. So that's one of my other personal experiences, that, yep, the B Unit ghost. So that one's in there, where I get more in depth on what happened and what some of the inmates maybe said or saw during some of these circumstances. And it went on for decades. It started before me. Before I even got there, the Baker Unit ghost was a thing, because I was even introduced to it, not the ghost, but to the story, as that officer, by another officer, when I started graveyard. They go, "I hope you're not scared of ghosts." And I'm like, "Really? I haven't really seen one." And then they go into the spiel and give me whatever they knew about it that was passed down, or their own experience, or the inmates. When they get up, they'd say, "Did you see him last night?" Or you'd hear him walking down. It's called a tier. Just a really narrow walkway outside of each of the cells. And they're usually four stories up, which is actually how the Baker Unit ghost, well, when he was an inmate, died. He was literally thrown over the edge, before they put up certain, and that was one of the reasons there's now safety, I'll just say fencing or bars up over the railings now, because that would happen. All of a sudden, for whatever reason, inmates would be inmates, and then one of them would end up getting tossed over the tier, and it doesn't end well. And so that's where it goes back to. And then they would hear him walking down the tier along the units. So yeah, none of the inmates really wanted to be on Baker Unit because of that reason. And it was often. It wasn't like, 5 years ago, I remember this. No, it was like last week. Did you see it this last month? Or so it was a known thing. So I get into that story as well.
Well, that's quite a tale.
Oh yeah, that's just one of many, and those are my personal ones that I of the prison that I included in there. I mean, again, there's some in the cities I've lived in, from Concrete to Seattle, it goes on and on. And then when you drop down to Oregon, because I lived there for a stint as well. I mean, Portland, there's creepy, unusual, paranormal, metaphysical stuff everywhere, and a big time in California. So as we talked about earlier, so those books are pretty interesting. So yeah, that's kind of a little tidbit or sample of some of the things you might read in the Triangle series.
Mark, do you have anything else that you wanted to ask him or talk about?
Yeah, just a couple of things. Derek, you did the thing with Children's Health Defense. Maybe that would be a good thing to bring up, and people can check out, considering that professional sports players and trainers are now using your type of shungite silver. Yeah, I guess we'll go with that one first.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up, because I forgot. Over these last few months, I've done a lot of other podcasts. And what I also have done, again, you can find it at cosmicshungite.com. Click on the About Cosmic Shungite tab, and it'll take you where I've now provided, I don't know, there's dozens and dozens of previous podcasts and interviews, a couple TV spots on there, of things that I've done. And one of them is what Mark just mentioned. It's, JFK's Children's Health Defense Network, and they call it Life Radio. But basically, they contacted me, I don't know, it was probably over a month ago now. I lose track of time, and asked me about it, and they found out about me and shungite, and had me on talking about it. So we got in everything from shungite bees, and we talked a lot about the science as well, because they're aware of all that. Another good one, that's again available on the About Cosmic Shungite page, would be the TPC podcast, and it's called The Power of Shungite. But that's another one where I talked to, one of those trainers I was talking about earlier, and how it's getting making its shungite is making its rounds through professional athletes and whatnot, and we get into a lot of the science, and he's really versed on a lot of the info regarding shungite and energies and how it works, and other physiological aspects of ourselves where shungite can be beneficial. But basically, there's I put together or grouped a lot of those podcasts I've done or interviews, and where and articles in some cases, a few newspaper ones in there looks like, where you can kind of catch up. And it's by far not everything that I've done or we've all done together, because that's just a lot of stuff. But some of the main ones are available on here, and even some new ones from relatively new from the Crow 777 podcast, where we get into a lot of the metaphysical stuff as well. Looks like there's I've been on there 6 or 7 times, looks like. So yeah, there's a group in there for anybody that's interested. You can go and kind of at your leisure listen to some of those interviews, and I get into all different topics, some the same stuff in same interviews, you never know, but there's usually something different in every one of them. And those are available on the website now, one easy to find space. And then I don't know if you guys had any other
Oh yeah,
questions.
any
Go ahead.
upcoming events?
I'm talking about what's up. A lot of my stuff is going to be local, meaning I'll be, well, this Friday looks like I'm speaking at a local museum regarding the Triangle series. So it's more of a and meet the author sort of deal, get your book signed, and I'll talk a little bit about the books. So that's going to be one of the local events. And then here, I think they're going to kind of wait till October to kind of have, a play off of the Halloween time frame. But a historical society down in Seattle has asked me to come speak about the books as well and have me as a guest speaker, to kind of tie it all together with the Halloween theme and whatnot. So I'll announce that online when I have the exact date and time. I think they're still working that out. I think they're actually selling tickets to that one, sounds like, because it's a big theater or something or other. I'm not really in that blend. I'm just the guy that gets to show up and do it. But the museum ones are usually free, to where I'm just kind of sitting there on a pile of books and talking to people and doing a little speech on them. So those ones would be fun for me. But that's, I think, the only stuff I have on my calendar now are, again, a few local events like that. Actually, I'm heading to a museum once we end this podcast today to deliver some of the books and talk to some people there about them, namely the Skagit Triangle book, because that's, again, where I'm located right now. But hopefully for everybody listening, we're gonna, and it's kind of, it's up to Nancy, but we're gonna hopefully start winding back up the Shungite Reality podcast and do it more regularly and get more information out there as well.
Yeah, Nancy, what about your other shows? How's that looking in the horizon?
Mark?
Yep, and she might be having mic issues again.
Okay, maybe we could catch up on that on another time then.
No, can you hear me?
We got you now.
Yeah.
Mark, what did you ask me about the other shows?
Can we look forward to those? Say what show, Cosmic Reality, and so forth.
Something will happen. Say what show needs to be reviewed, and also your show. I don't know if you want Waken Aware to go, but
Yeah, we'll work on those, like you said.
yeah, we'll come back. Anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much everything from my end.
Yeah, I mean it's a pretty full show, so we'll cover stuff on the next.
Yeah, there'll be more, I'm sure. And good luck with the books, Derek. Really, they're
Yeah,
awesome.
thank you. I appreciate that.
And you guys out there, remember, kids, buy him Shungite, and the rest of you, look around and see what woo-woo stuff's happening right around you. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Thank you for being here. Be safe.